Okay. I have asked someone who has spoken at this meeting a few years ago at this point to come and speak again. And I'm just really looking forward to hearing him again. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome Paul G. And let me unmute you.
Thanks, Bridget. Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Great, great. And how long does the meeting last?
We can go as long as we need to. You are not obligated to be here beyond an hour. So you can speak as long as you want about
Okay.
anything.
I am going to speak for 3 hours, so make yourselves comfortable.
Sounds good.
My name is Paul. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And thank you for asking me to share my story, Bridget. I appreciate it. Nice to see some of you again. I don't remember what it was that I talked about last time, but I'm in a couple of different 12-step programs, so I'll just kind of touch on them because I think they're all kind of interrelated. I come from a long line of alcoholics. Pretty much every male in my family tree, my bloodline is an alcoholic. Some of us get sober, some don't, some die from it. We tend to be high functioning. We tend to keep the house, the wife, the job, all that good stuff, but inside we're dying, and that's kind of where. My dad attempted to take his life when he was in his 60s, and he eventually got sober. And that was my first introduction to, I'm sure I was aware of Alcoholics Anonymous before then, but that was the first time somebody in my life that I knew of was in a 12-step program. I kind of knew that the gene was there, but high functioning is in many ways kind of a terrible form of alcoholism because it delays for many of us the inevitable truth because we can kid ourselves into thinking it's not that bad. And my life on paper was great. I was achieving a lot of professional things that I'd set out to do, and money, recognition. And I thought about suicide 50 times a day. And I just thought something's wrong. And I'd had people over the years say, boy, you got really drunk last night. That's the third weekend in a row you've gotten, so drunk. But I could always tell myself, yeah, but it's been 6 months since I had way too much to drink. I don't drink during the day. I was not your stereotypical, at least in my mind when I came into the program, I was not your stereotypical alcoholic. I thought, well, if you don't drink during the day, you've never had DUIs and you're not losing jobs because of it. How could I be an alcoholic? And my psychiatrist said to me, then why can't you stop? And I didn't have an answer for him. And he said that he could no longer continue to see me as a client unless I quit drinking. And he suggested I go to AA. And on my way home from the appointment, I'm thinking, can AA help me? And I swear to God, at that very moment, a car passed me and the license plate was AA can. But that didn't get me sober. That just made me go, oh, wow, what a coincidence. I wonder what I'm going to drink tonight because AA sounds boring. And, it's pretty alcoholic. Somebody said one time, we're long on arrogance and short on responsibility. And that was me and still can be me. So I kept drinking, thinking I'm going to figure this out on my own. Well, you know how that works out. And I just got more and more miserable. And I remember one night, it was probably a month or two away from my bottom, from getting sober, but I should say it was a month or two away from me getting sober, but I look back on it now and it was a bottom. I was out of town on business and I thought, I'm gonna be good. I'm gonna stay in the hotel. I'm not gonna go out drinking. Being unfaithful to my then wife was also a part of my addiction. And I knew if I stayed in the hotel room, that would, nip that in the bud as well. And I thought, oh man, I'm just gonna be crawling out of my skin in this hotel room. I'm just gonna go have one. And cut to, it's closing time. I've had 10, and the promise I've made to myself that I was going to be faithful. I'm hitting on a woman that I'm not even physically attracted to. And she looked at my ring. I asked her to go back to my hotel room, and she looked at my ring and she said, "You're married." And, in that moment, I thought, what is the matter with you that this complete stranger is more concerned about your marriage than you are? And I knew something was really wrong with me, but I just thought it was weakness. I thought I just needed discipline. I didn't know that I was up against many things larger than myself and that I needed help if I was ever going to grow up and find the strength to get sober, become the man I wanted to become. I remember waking up the next morning, and at some point during the night, this woman had tucked a little note in my jacket, in my pocket, and it said, call me if you need to talk. And I thought, is this really who you wanted to be when you were a little boy? This lying, cheating, sad, angry, selfish, confused man-child. But honestly, that seemed better than going to AA. Because AA was the unknown. So in my mind, it was going to be the worst of traffic school with the worst of church in one horrible, boring package. I never imagined there would be laughter there. I never imagined there would be cathartic tears. I never imagined I would feel one of many, that I would find my life's purpose. I never imagined all those things. I just imagined being bored. And somebody telling me what to do. And, it just one of a million examples of my crystal ball being broken. But I still go to it to this day. I don't want to go to that get together. It's going to be boring. There's going to be traffic, blah, 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 blah. I can't imagine the number of beautiful moments I've missed out in my life because of my fear and my crystal ball. But I've also gotten to take advantage of a lot of great opportunities in my sobriety because I go to my crystal ball less than I used to. Like all of us, I'm a work in progress. So I went to my first AA meeting because I woke up. My sobriety date is July 21st, 2003. And that's the day that I woke up and I thought the same three thoughts that I would always think every morning, which was, you slept too late, you're a lazy piece of shit, and your life is passing you by. And my stomach would tighten into this knot. And I knew the only thing that would bring me pleasure was the very thing that was making me more suicidal, filled with self-hatred. And I just said out loud, not in like a religious way, just in a defeated way, "God help me, I can't do this anymore." And for some reason, that was the day that I found the strength to go check out an AA meeting. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I look back now and it's like, oh, I did a first and a second step there. outside my first AA meeting. So I went to check it out. I wasn't sure I was an alcoholic. I was just like, I can't keep living the way I'm living. I have to start thinking about trying something else. And people seemed oddly happy. Well, especially here in Los Angeles, where AA is can be kind of rah-rah and touchy-feely and a lot of joy, a lot of joy. And I thought, has nobody told these people that they aren't supposed to drink or use anymore? How can they be so happy? They asked newcomers to identify. I raised my hand. I said, my name's Paul. I don't know if I'm an alcoholic. I'm here to check it out. And as soon as I said the word alcoholic, I started to cry, and I cried for the rest of the meeting. And probably by the time it was halfway through, I felt like I was part of something that I wanted to be a part of, that a part of me wanted to be a part of. Another part of me wanted nothing to do with strangers, that wanted nothing to do with the unknown. But you know how sometimes we may not intellectually recognize the truth, but we emotionally feel the truth when we hear it. My instinct told me this. Throw your lot in with these people. And so my intellect said, all right, I'll try this for a year. I'm going to treat it like a scientific experiment. And if it doesn't work, I'll figure something else out. And the first guy to stick his hand out to me at the end of the meeting became my sponsor. He's still my sponsor to this day. And I wanted to feel like he felt. There was a light on in his eyes. He was confident. I wanted what he had. And so I did what he said. And I started to feel better. And somewhere around the two, three, and that included doing the steps, taking commitments, all the stuff, we talk about. And about, I don't know, maybe 3 months in, I was sitting in my living room one night. And I realized I have no desire to get loaded. And that's when I truly came to believe. That made it easy for me to then do a daily third step, because I felt that power greater than myself. I can't intellectualize there being a power greater than myself, but when I work the program, I can feel a power greater than myself. And that's what keeps me coming back, is the feelings I get in AA. Yeah, there's some intellectual knowledge that helps me navigate my life, but the fire that burns in me is from the feeling of AA, which is the byproduct of doing the work for me. Because if I stop doing the work, if I stop sponsoring, taking commitments, making and taking phone calls, I'll start to get cynical, I'll start to withdraw, and I'll convince myself that it doesn't work anymore, because it will feel like it's not working anymore. So I realize that it is a temporary, like it says in the basic text in our big book, it is a temporary reprieve based on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And I liken it to the 12 steps being the weights in a gym. The gym's awesome. Meetings are the lobby of the gym, but that's not where we get fit. Thinking that we can sit in a meeting and become spiritually fit is like thinking we can get, great abs sitting in the lobby of the gym. So for me, I need to work all 12 steps. I need to practice those principles. And the principles for me is the way that I, in addition to service and prayer and meditation, is the way, one of the primary ways that I stay connected to my higher power. Because if I, if I'm sponsoring people and I'm taking commitments, but I'm being a dirtbag outside of the rooms, that's going to negatively affect my relationship with my higher power. And there have been times in my professional life where money and principles have butted heads. And I've been faced with the decision of, do I want to make more money or do I want to go against my code of ethics? And I'm proud to say that I have stayed with my code of ethics, and it's costing me dearly. But I sleep well at night for the most part. Sometimes money worries, will crop up because I'm looking in my crystal ball and not trusting my higher power. But that's how I connect to my higher power, because I've seen enough people take back the wheel and become miserable, making decisions based on fear or greed or the illusion of lack, rather than saying, maybe, this door needs to close for a different door to open. Because that happened to me early in maybe 6, 7 years into my sobriety. The line of work that I was in, I could just, it was kind of naturally coming to an end, and I could have kind of forced it and tried to drum up more work, but my heart wasn't in it. And I found what I do now for a living, which in many ways is kind of a result of what I've learned in the rooms. It's not, I don't approach it as a professional. It's a peer-to-peer thing for mental health, but the spirit of it and the tools that I learned there are things that I sometimes share, in my job. And I find a unifying sense of meaning, purpose, and vocation, which to me, it doesn't feel like an accident. It feels like this is where I'm supposed to be in the universe. And those moments for me are when I just really, really appreciate the program, when the ticking 60 minutes clock in my head that tells me I've blown it and I'm, behind the eight ball. When that clock stops and I'm able to feel like, no, I'm right where I should be. AA is the only thing that has ever brought me that feeling. Maybe accolades here or there, but they're so fleeting, and few and far between. I never imagined that AA would produce the feelings that I was looking to money, power, and prestige to bring about in me. And I've had tastes of money, power, and prestige, not huge, but decent. And it was exciting temporarily, but very fleeting. And right back to what's next? What's next? I've helped the 12-step programs have helped me process childhood trauma, childhood sexual trauma, incest. My mother was my abuser, and it wasn't even on my radar that mothers can be sexually abusive. Because I always imagined that that incest had to be dramatic and overt, but there's lots of way that incest can occur subtly, in ways that fuck the kid up every bit as much as overt. And in some ways, does an extra number on your head because you're still going, does it count? Does it not count? It's like you can have as many therapists as you want telling you, oh my God, yes, it counts. We would have taken you out of the home. But there's, survivors, we tend to minimize things for one reason or another. And the 12-step programs have helped me give weight to what happened to me so that I can heal, and not to punish my mom, but to stop punishing me by minimizing it. Self-love is something that it doesn't get talked about a lot in LA or in AA, and it It was in another 12-step program where I really came face to face with my how mean I am to myself, the mean voice in my head. And that needed to be addressed if I was going to ever heal my trauma. And it's been slow going. It's been 15 years. I've been sober off drugs and alcohol for 21, but it's been a lot more of a circuitous route and the other fellowship, because there's gray areas in it. And I think us addicts and alcoholics in general, I don't think we do well with gray areas. We love black and white thinking, 0 or 10. I don't know about you, but I have a tough time doing 5. I need help to do 5. So that has been a big part of my recovery, has been healing that wounded kid that's still in there. As new agey, touchy feely as that sounds, it's the truth. And so self-care is a big thing for me, in addition to all the stuff I talked about in AA, being of service and having a code of ethics and principles. But something that was new to me was, what about your principles to yourself? What about taking a nap when you're tired? I used to shame myself for laying down and taking a nap, like, oh, you're lazy, you're this, you're that. And I don't do that anymore. Do I wish that I could stay awake and be productive? Yeah. But another part of self-care is meeting yourself where you're at. And so for me, that's been a big part of my recovery, is being gentle with myself. Nobody has ever shamed themselves into being the person they want to be. But we, in my experience, we grow through self-compassion, compassion towards others, of course. And baby steps. That's how it's looked for me. Compassion for others is really important, but not at the expense of compassion for ourselves. And I eventually had to cut contact with my mom, which was the most painful thing I ever did. And it's not because of what she did, it's because that she refused to respect boundaries that I had begun setting. And I had to protect my mental health. And it pains me to this day that I don't have a mom in my life, but I know that I would be miserable emotionally and mentally if I still had somebody in my life who was toxic. I feel like I could go on and on, but those are the big parts of my story. So I hope I shared something that rang a bell. And if not, we'll refund your money. Thanks for letting me share.